Good afternoon. It's good to see you all here today. It's remarkable how to have seen over the past week how in the classes, the various classes presented by brethren who did not consult one another, we had a lot of overlap, a lot of the same subjects and themes and strings tied together. And surprisingly, to me anyway, a lot of that comes up in what we're going to look at this afternoon. What we want to do today is to look at the way that Israel went about taking possession of the inheritance that God gave them, and to look at what lessons we might learn in taking possession of the inheritance that He has given us. Now, in Exodus chapter 23, I want to ask you to read this just now. But in Exodus 23, and this is just before the ratification of the covenant at Sinai, Moses went through with Israel what the plan was, the general approach to how they were going to take possession of the land. And these are the key elements of that program. First off, it was not something that was going to be done in a day. Israel was meant to grow from strength to strength and take possession of the land as God drove out the people before them. It was a matter that was envisioned at Sinai before they ever came close to the land as something that would take an extended period of time. Secondly, Israel was required to put forth their best efforts, knowing full well that it would not be enough, and relying on God to take care of the rest of it. It was something that they would not be able to do on their own, and it was something that He would not do without them. So this required a certain level of reliance on God to handle the things that were beyond their capability and to trust in Him enough to put forth their best efforts. Thirdly, there was to be no peace except in victory. That is to say, in the terms of what we read in Exodus 23, there was never to be any accommodation with the people who are already living in the land. There might be periods in which there was not active warfare, but these were not periods of peace. They were simply periods in which we weren't engaged in active warfare. We were doing something else, like building up our own capabilities. Fourth, there was a definition of success. There was a specific land that they were given to take possession of, and they would know when they had reached that end. They were not commanded to take the whole world. In this particular instance, there was a specific land. This is what was promised. This is the possession that you are to take. And so they had a recognizable goal, and they would know exactly when they were complete. And finally, and most importantly, you shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only shalt thou serve. So they were commanded to serve only Yahweh, who was about to ratify this covenant with them. Much later, about 40 years later, as they were about ready to enter into the Holy Land, Moses went through this again with them, and he gave them a few more details. In particular, he outlined the borders of the land. And again, this is everything I'm citing from. But I won't ask you to read it just now. But he provided specific details about the borders of the land. This isn't a list, as we have in other places, of these are the nations that you need to dispossess. But he gave specific cities and territories that were on the border that delineated the land, much in the way that our maps today delineate the territories of a land. And he concluded that this is the land which you shall inherit by lot. And this was a new provision, the notion that they were to inherit it by lot. We can speculate a little bit as to why they had to inherit it by lot according to the tribes. And my supposition at this point is that it wasn't something that was inherently necessary, but that over the period of the 40 years intervening, Israel had been organized according to tribal organization, And the thought was that they would continue to work that way once they got into the land. But this provision, he said, you were going to divide the land, this land specifically, by lot among the tribes, and particularly they were to be assigned that land by Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. So these specific provisions were added to the original plan at this particular time, in addition to the provision that, oh, by the way, this isn't for all of the tribes, this isn't for all of Israel, this is just for the 9.5 that have not yet received their territory. This is a map that I found of all places on Wikipedia. The person who did this was showing the outline of the territory as defined in Numbers chapter 34 and in Ezekiel 47. I was drawn to it immediately, not just because I was looking for something that would show this, but also because it parallels real closely a map that I drew up something like 20 years ago based on Ezekiel 47, convincing myself that Sully's map was not the case. I think I might have taken in a bit more of this territory over here in the map that I drew up out of Ezekiel 47, but the general outline of the land is very similar. And you will notice that according to this particular fellow, where he identifies the landmarks, they're just about the same territory in those two places. There's a couple of other things that you will notice. One of them is that map shows territories being assigned to Israel, promised to them, being part of God's charge to them that Israel never inhabited. Ever. This thing takes in pretty much all of modern-day Lebanon. Now, you ask, you know, if you look at this and think about what was going on here, first off, the assignment of this land to 9.5 tribes is a change in the plans because 2.5 tribes had kind of preempted the deal. They had got it to Moses ahead of time, looking at the land that they had conquered from Sihon and said, you know, this is a good country. We could live here. We could raise our cattle here. We could leave our kids here and come across and help you fight, but this is a good land for us. And Moses acceded to that. And it left now 9.5 tribes, not 12 tribes, to go in and take possession of the land, which is to say they started from where they were. They didn't insist that everybody be in on exactly the same deal that we had intended way back before with the covenant in Sinai. But where we are is where we start from. Secondly, he assigned two specific people to do these assignments. If you think about this, the organizing of the land, the allotment of the land to the tribes, was assigned to people who had responsibility and thinking about, first off, the spiritual and religious aspects of the national life. Eleazar the priest was in charge of the tabernacle and all of the worship. His was the care of the people from a religious point of view. Joshua was in charge of the civil, if you will, and the military side of it. He was the one who was looking to see how is this going to work as a nation? How are we going to work this in a practical kind of a sense? And so these two were supposed to be the people who assigned the land to the tribes and gave them exactly their territories. Little note at the bottom there is a place in Deuteronomy chapter 1 that mentions the land is extending to the Euphrates River. This map does not take that into account. We can only presume that it was not meant to be assigned by lots all the way there, but that was something that they could grow into over time. We get to Joshua chapter 13, and we're looking at something that is nearly 40 years after the original, 45 years late after the original assignment of the land. Israel has been fighting in the country since they crossed over, and they've been fighting under Joshua for now 7 years. And it is observed of Joshua at this time that you are old and advanced in years, which is to say he was no longer going to be able to lead Israel in battle. And we go through the enumeration again that we had 2.5 tribes that were settled on the east side of the river, that there had been 7 years of war, and this is recounted in the next chapter, and that the power, the strength of the opposition had basically been broken, and they had occupied the central hill country of the Holy Land. So with Joshua now no longer able to lead them, the time had come to pass it on to others to take the lead. I have suggested the next generation. It may not have been. It may have been simply leaders who were around at that time who were in charge of leading the units or the tribes of Israel. Oops, wrong side. And this is the land that is outlined in Joshua 13 as requiring... Can you see the colors in there? That's not showing up very clearly, is it? There is a pinkish area. The central hill country in what is today called Judea and Samaria, and up further in the hill country of Galilee, are the parts that they have conquered so far. And the parts that are yet unconquered are delineated as the land of the Philistines, the Avites, the Canaanites, who dwelt for the most part in the Israelan Valley, the Gebalites, who were in the far north, all of the country of Lebanon, the Sidonians, who were in the southern part of what we call Lebanon today, the Geshurites, who were in the eastern portion of Lebanon, and the Maacathites, who lived down close to the Sea of Galilee. And so these were the lands that are identified in Joshua 13 as being yet unoccupied. This is country that you need to be now assigning, says God to Eleazar and Joshua, to the children of Israel. And so here is what he said. These countries, these people, I will drive out from before the children of Israel. Only divide thou it by lot unto the Israelites for an inheritance, as I have commanded thee. I will do this. Now you get on with the planning. Set up the arrangements. Make it happen. And again he repeats it in the very next verse. Now, therefore, divide this land as an inheritance to the 9.5 tribes. And the beginning of the next chapter we read that these are the areas which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed as an inheritance to them. So they didn't do it just all by themselves. They did it in consultation. They talked about it to the people who were going to have to go out and carry out the work. And again, it's repeated in verse 5, as the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did. They divided the land. So this is in Joshua chapter 14, immediately after this point at which we are told, Joshua, you're too old, you can't go do this anymore. Apportion the lots now. And so here's kind of the way it went. First, in Judah, Caleb came to Joshua, and he observes that he's 85 years old. And he says, but if the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said. And he goes out and he conquers part of the land that is allotted to Judah, and it's observed that the land had rest from war. So they went out, they conquered some of it, they backed off, they built. They had a little rest from war. And then in the next chapter, they go and they capture Kirjath Sefer, another portion of the land, still with Caleb in the lead. But the Philistines and the Jebusites were not conquered. It appears to be going pretty much according to the plan in Exodus 23. It's a progressive thing. You conquer a little, then you build up your strength, you go out and you conquer more. There's stuff left to be done. It's kind of progressing along the way it's meant to do here in Judah. Then you go back and see what the children of Joseph are doing. We read in chapter 16:10 about the Ephraimites that they did not drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer, but subjected them to tribute or to forced labor. Now wait a minute, that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. We read in the verse just before that there were towns which were set apart for the Ephraimites within the inheritance of the Manassites. How does that happen? And you read on a little bit farther that in Issachar and in Asher, Manasseh had Bethshan, Ibleam, Dor, Endor, Tanakh, Megiddo. So they were taking cities that were in the territory that was assigned to these other tribes, Issachar and Asher. Something not right going on here in the north. Okay? First, they're not driving out people that they should be driving out, but subjecting them to forced tribute. Secondly, they're starting to take cities in an area that wasn't assigned to them. They're kind of going outside of the territory that had been allotted to that particular tribe. We learn that they were unable to drive out the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Maybe that's not such a big surprise. But the big thing is, they came back to Joshua and said, give us more land. Give us another territory. We're strong. We're big. We can go do it. Joshua points out to them that they had plenty of land that was assigned to them, that if they were strong and big, they should go occupy it. But they were evidently looking for easier land to conquer, something that wasn't part of the assignment that had been made to them. And then you get to chapter 18, and things get even worse. There remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. And Joshua said to the children of Israel, how long will you neglect to go and possess the land which the Lord your God, the God of your fathers, has given to you? What were these seven tribes doing? Right? Judah went out, conquered some land. Ephraim and Manasseh went out, subjugated some land, conquered some land. And these seven tribes were kind of standing around looking at their feet. So Joshua says to them now, pick out from among you three men for each tribe, and I will send them. They shall go through their land, survey it according to their inheritance, and come back to me, and they will divide it into seven parts. Judah shall remain in their territory in the south, and the house of Joseph shall remain on their territory in the north. You shall therefore survey the land in seven parts and bring the survey here to me that I may cast lots for you before the Lord your God. Now, Eleazar Joshua had set out the territories. They had set out the lots back at the beginning of chapter 14. Here he says, okay, the assignments we made aren't suitable. You don't care for them. You don't think that they're going to work, or you're not interested in them. You go out and figure it out. You go out and do some planning on this. Bring it back to me and we'll make it work. So here's what they did. They went out and they got the lands. And here's a map of the territories that they assigned. Now, if you remember the land that we gave you earlier, it took in almost all of what is today the land of Israel and all of what is Lebanon. If you look at the map that is listed here and what was basically the map of Israel for the rest of the Old Testament period, it goes up about as far north as the Litani River, the Tyre area. It does not take in most of what is today Lebanon. The seven tribes went out and they laid out their territories, but they didn't plan to take the whole of the land. They left out the territory of the Sidonians, the Gebalites, and the land of Lebanon. We get into the first chapter of Judges. This is a fairly familiar territory. We find that certain of the tribes were unable to drive out the inhabitants of the plain, unable to take several of the strong cities. They did not drive out others. They put the Canaanites to tribute and several of the other indigenous peoples, and they dwelt among some of the nations instead of driving them out. We get to Judges 3, and we find that the land of the Philistines was yet untouched. The Canaanites remained in the land. The Sidonians, the Hivites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Jebusites are all named by the nation as peoples that should have been cast out that weren't. And God says, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drive them out. I'm going to leave them there to prove Israel and to teach them war. They're going to have to learn it somewhere. So here's what we got. We have in Exodus 23 the basic plan that they would conquer the land little by little. He says, I will drive them out before you until you have increased and you inherit the land. Numbers chapter 34. This is the land that we're going to give to you by lot, and Joshua and Eleazar shall do it. Joshua 13, we have the twofold commandment, basically, now do it. Right? Divide the land like I told you to. Do it now. In Joshua 14, they did. And then come back in Joshua 18 again. They hadn't gone out to possess the land. And they have to redivide it all over again. And then in Judges chapter 2, we find this description by the Lord, or this judgment by the Lord. I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died. So we've gone from the whole plan, this is the way it's going to work, to resignation saying, we got about as far as we're going to get. That's it. So, what went wrong? Why did they not accomplish all that they were set out to do? First off, it seems that they worked well only when they had strong leadership. That is to say, they broke the back of the main resistance under Joshua, and Judah under Caleb did pretty well. Secondly, they did not allocate the whole of the land. Right? If you don't allocate the whole of the land, if you don't plan to take possession of the whole of the land, you're not going to accomplish possession of the whole of the land. Third, they did not actively pursue the conquest. You know, they didn't get after it. They trusted in their own strength when they were trying to do something, and when that was not enough, they failed. Each tribe fought alone. There is one exception to that. We'll get to this. But I think it's one of those things that they stopped having good success when they stopped fighting as a nation. When they went out, each tribe into its own little area, they started running into trouble real fast. Some of them took land that was allotted to tribes other than themselves. They sought advantages that God had not promised them, such as tribute or forced labor, people staying in the land to benefit them. They made alliances and marriages that were contrary to the commandment that God had explicitly given them. And finally, they began to worship some of the local gods in addition to Yahweh. They exhibited what our Lord would call little faith. And they saw spotty success. But I want to emphasize, this was not a total failure. This was not a case where they weren't able to inherit any of the land. So let's take a look also at the things that they did right. Israel remained a distinct people. Now, this is maybe not such a big deal if all you do is read the Bible, but people who look at archaeology are not so convinced that this was the case. I mean, people that I've been, you know, doing a little reading on this, and they say basically you go back to this period in time and you can't tell really from the digs who's an Israelite and who's a Canaanite. You can't tell. But according to the scriptural outline, they always knew. We're Israelites, they're not. They remained a distinct people. They kept that part of it going. That was important. There was no tribe that failed completely. Even Dan possessed a part of their territory. All of them possessed some of what they had allotted to themselves, right? All of them had a place in the land. There was no tribe that failed completely. No one went back to Egypt. Now, you don't stop and think about that very much, but remember when they first went up to the land, the first time that they were charged with now go in and take possession, that was a real concern that they might get up and go back to Egypt. This time around, nobody even discussed it from what we can tell. And nobody actually did it. We do have one instance of cooperation among the tribes, and it seems to have turned out pretty well, where Judah turns to Simeon and says, let's go take possession of our territory, of our lot together. And so we have the very largest of the tribes in terms of numbers helping the very smallest to take possession of his territory. One thing that went well and seemed to have had good returns for the both of them. Finally, and most importantly, even if it was imperfect, they did remember Yahweh, their God. This is, I think, in fulfillment of the promise that God gave to Abraham many hundreds of years before, that this will be an everlasting covenant, that he would be a God to Abraham and to his descendants after him in all their generations. God did not give up. That was the important factor, I think, in all of the things that you can say went right for the people of Israel. Now, we haven't mentioned these things just as a history review, of course. This is about us. They are us, right? I mean, we are in very similar situations. We worship the same God. He has a lot of the same approaches to us as he had to them. So let's take a look at this. Jesus at one point said to his disciples, which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he have wherewith to complete it? And again, a little bit later, or what king, as he goes forth to encounter another king in war, will not sit down first and take counsel, whether he be able to do with 10,000, he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000. And these are things that the Lord then advised his disciples to do. When you have something that is difficult and important to do, count the cost. Figure out what it's going to cost you and decide before you start whether you're going to be able to finish it. Same thing, take counsel in these matters, which isn't quite the same thing as counting the cost. It means figure out how you're going to do it. Talk with people. Call in your advisors. Make a plan. Right? And he gave this his example. He took his disciples aside and said, behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and all the things that are written through the prophets shall be accomplished unto the Son of Man. For he shall be delivered up to the Gentiles, and shall be mocked and shamefully treated and spit upon, and they shall scourge and kill him, and the third day he will rise again. Jesus understood what the cost was going to be, and he determined that he was going to pay it. He didn't just go merrily through his life not thinking about what's coming at me. He figured out what it was going to cost, and he decided that this was something he was going to do. So, we talked about what we are going to be, how the things that we learn from Israel might help us in taking possession of our inheritance. Let's take a quick look at what that inheritance might be. And this is one definition of it. We read in 2 Peter chapter 1, his, that is to say, God's divine power, has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us to his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted to us his precious and very great promises, that through these you may escape from the corruption that is in the world because of passion and become partakers of the divine nature. Israel was granted an inheritance that was a land that was defined by certain peoples who lived there or by a territory that you might draw a map around. This was their definition of what their inheritance was. We are given to be partakers of the divine nature. That's our definition that we're going to work with now as to what that inheritance is. And Israel was given a plan to take possession of that inheritance, and we are also. This is the land to be possessed and how it is to be possessed. For every reason, for this very reason, make every effort so to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. Period. That's the program. And as Israel's land was well-defined, you would know when you had achieved it. This is it. That's all there is to it. Ready, set, get out underway. So we are given, rather than a land with inhabitants to be expelled, we're given a spirit to be possessed. There's not a list here of nations, but divine attributes that are to be won. And like Israel, we are meant to go from strength to strength. This is not something that you're going to do in a day. We are to carry on this conquest as Israel did until it's complete over the period of time that is given to us, until the conquest is finished. So what can we learn? Well, these are the things that we learned from watching Israel. First off, Israel worked well only under strong leadership, such as Joshua and Caleb. We came to a point where Joshua was too old to lead the nation in warfare anymore. And even Caleb finally got, you know, well past his 85 years and got to a point where he wasn't able to lead Judah anymore. We have Christ. How old is Christ? He's still able, as we have seen in some of in our classes today, to lead in the battle against the enemy and to possess our inheritance. But we also have there our parents, our elders in the ecclesia, trusted brothers and sisters, people that can help, can actually lead and guide the way in our possession of the inheritance. Secondly, Israel did not allocate the whole of the land. What do we learn from that? We need to take an honest stock of where we stand with regard to the program that our Lord has set before us. We need to plan out how we will take possession of the whole of the Spirit and not just leave it to chance or to settle for, you know, 6 out of the 8 points. Take the whole of the Spirit. Plan it out. Take stock of where we are right now and what we have to do next. Israel did not actively pursue the conquest. And sometimes I feel like I'm just waiting for God to do it for me. This is not the way the program is set out. It is as Israel's program, one where we are expected to lay out our entire full best effort, knowing full well that it won't be enough, but trusting that God will make the possession possible. They trusted in their own strength. We need to remember that it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. We don't need to do it under our own strength, but we do need to put our full strength into it. Each tribe fought alone. There is something that we need to learn from. We can learn by mutual improvement. We can learn by making things a joint effort to help it go ahead. We need, in short, to plan to do what God has commanded us. Israel took, in some cases, land that was allotted to other tribes. We need to take care not to do that, not to trip up our brethren, to make it difficult for them to take possession of the territory that they need to own, or the inheritance that is given to them. Israel sought advantages that God had not promised. We need to remember that there is nothing in the world, there is nothing of the flesh, that is an improvement on the spirit that we are given in Christ. They made alliances and marriages contrary to the commandment. Sometimes we hear this comment among the brethren, "That's just the way I am." And I think it's necessary to note that for what that is. That is not helpful. If you are willing to settle for, "That's just the way I am," you are never going to inherit the Spirit of Christ. This will not help you to become like the Lord. They began to worship the local gods. Things like position and popularity and praise of men and wealth. These are things that the people around us worship. These are things that we ourselves would value highly and pursue and try to accumulate for ourselves. These are not the things that pertain to the Spirit of Christ. We need to be wary of beginning to worship such things. If we will possess greater faith, we will be given greater blessings. From the good things that Israel did, we can also learn. Israel remained a distinct people. This is a good thing. We need to stick together. We need to remember that God has made us to be His people. Not me, not those guys over there, but us as a community to be His people. And we are never to forget that we are meant to be one people. Israel succeeded in part because there was no single tribe that failed completely. And I think we need to be able to look for success in all of our brethren and to acknowledge that success in all of our brethren in what measure there is. Some are Judah, some are Dan. All have had some success in acquiring possession of the inheritance. No one went back to Egypt. I think that one's pretty obvious. We have the example of Judah and Simeon fighting together. And I think that's one of the things that we can look to and say, yeah, we can do that. We know how to do that. We can help each other. And it's not necessarily just a case of Judah helped Simeon. They went together, the biggest and the smallest, fighting together. And together they succeeded in taking possession of their inheritance. And no matter how attractive the world looks to us sometimes, we also can remember the Lord our God. And remembering that Christ has promised to be with us always, even to the end of the world. Coming to an end now. Jesus counseled His disciples to plan their obedience so that they would not be defeated by the hardships that would come upon them. Count the cost. Take counsel. Jesus Himself clearly showed evidence of planning His obedience, and He followed through with His determination to the end. The bread and the wine are not a memory of a job that is half done or incomplete obedience. Now, we have this list of spiritual attributes which we are given to possess in order to partake of the divine nature. God will give us success if we take every care to obey Him and take care to notice the whole of His program. As God left some of the earlier inhabitants to be snares to Israel and to teach them war, so He will do, so I submit He has done, if we fail to grasp and to pursue the job that He has given us. There should be no accommodation, no compromise with the old ways, with the old man. As God gives us strength, we need to drive them out and to possess the Spirit. And we'll leave you with this thought.